The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Welcome to the October edition of the Center Steer Podcast. This is number 19. I'm John Kostage, your host here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I like to report on the weather. It's a lovely, wonderful day. It's probably about, 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Do your own math conversion for Celsius, and it's bright and sunny. As a result of that, our usual panelist, Harold, couldn't be with us this month. He's working on repairing the roof to his shop. But joining me this month is Morgan from Vermont, Mark, fellow FPLRG member here from Pittsburgh, Steve from Milton Keynes, and our special guest is Ben from Manchester. Is that right, Ben?
Yorkshire.
Yorkshire. Ben from Yorkshire, who runs funrover.com. We will get to that in just a moment. First, we'd like to dedicate this episode to Bill Colosia. He was the gentleman who started the Land Rover mailing list. I think one of the first mailing lists, to my understanding, that has been around for a long, long time. He was 52 years old from Massachusetts and passed away, I think, about 2 weeks ago. There was a nice gathering of Land Rover friends and trucks at his funeral. In fact, I will read from the LRL posting from Ben Smith, from the Land Rover owner mailing list. That's the official name, the Land Rover owner mailing list. And so I'll just kind of, I think it's a good summation and read of what happened for him. So a number of Bill's Land Rover friends showed up for his memorial at the funeral home Monday night. There were a bunch of photos of him past Land Rover events over the decades. And after they went out for drinks at his favorite pub, Tuesday morning, there was a Land Rover convoy that took him from the home to the church. That's the funeral home. To the church, and then to the graveyard. His Series 2A 88-inch right-hand drive led off with a hearse behind after family members came, and then there was a Land Rover convoy in age order. Series 180, Series 2 88-inch, Series 2A 109, Series 2 109, a Series 3 88. That's Bill Fischel's, our very own Bill Fischel's. Series 3 109 Stage 1, a North American spec, D90, another D90, two more, another D90, and two Range Rover Classics. Apparently also in attendance, but I think they didn't make the convoy, was a 101 forward control, a Series 2 88-inch, several discos, and lots of other Land Rover people who attended, Crispin Aspen, Jeff Berger, Bill O'Hara, some other names, Dixon Kenner, I know him, and some others. So photos are available if you wanted to see some of those. They are available on the Fourfold website. I'll have a link to that. And so if you wish to see photos of Bill. And so it was a nice showing for the gentleman who I did not meet, but he did, in fact, was one of the first people to start the Land Rover community online back in the day, as they like to say, with Land Rover owners mailing list. And Morgan, do you have the actual link to that? I'll have that certainly in the show notes, but
I think to the Fourfold.
I'm sorry, to the mailing list.
Oh, to the mailing list. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we'll get that in the show notes. But it is so if you're not a member of the Land Rover owner mailing list, you may want to consider it. You can get a immediate emails or even a digest, as I get, and it's mainly around series trucks, especially here in the United States. So that kind of the community of those folks, but they do talk about other things. And if you're looking for help with your truck, or you're traveling, or you're overlanding, it's actually can be a good list. I know, Morgan, you tie into it with your series parts.
I'm mainly a subscriber. Definitely ask occasional technical questions. It's very nice and helpful. Lots of old pros on there who know their stuff. It's great.
Definitely. I've met some of the individuals there when I've attended various events over the years. I didn't meet Bill, but at least I don't recall that I have. So, but yeah, check out the list if you're not familiar with it, or if you want to kind of keep in another way of keeping in contact with the bigger Land Rover community, especially if you're a series truck owner. As it seems like there's less and less of us as time goes on. But yeah.
Yeah, we'd like to, you know, keep the numbers as healthy as possible. And they actually do have various international versions of the mailing list. So if you're in the UK, and I think they have one for New Zealand and Australia and maybe a couple others.
So I'm drinking a beer from Quebec. Here's to you, Bill. And thanks for all you've done for the Land Rover community, especially here in the United States. So this month we have a special guest. That is Ben, who runs the funrover.com blog/website/vlog. And before we talk to Ben, I've been waiting to get him on for a while because he's one of the inspirations for the podcast a couple of years ago. So we're almost pushing 2 years on the podcast. And so maybe 3 years ago or so, you did a vlog, a video podcast. Mm. And I think you did one or two of them, and it gave me an idea. I figured someone's doing this. Why can't I do this? And that was one of the inspirations I had for doing the podcast. So I need to thank you for that. And what happened to the video blogging, I guess? And more importantly, how did you get Fun Rover started? Where'd the name come from? And we'll ask other questions, but at least that's our introduction.
Okay.
I know it was a build-up to I'm not sure what.
Well, I started around 4 years ago, Fun Rover. At the time, I was working as a freelance web and graphic designer, and you know how things go. You kind of get a bit fed up with working for customers who pay the bills. So decided to combine kind of all my interests of like design, writing, researching, and also Land Rovers all into one place. So it really started as a personal project, but from there, it's kind of branched out into it's not a huge website, but, you know, it's getting bigger all the time. And we've got a lot of things planned, like we're going to launch an online store, hopefully produce more video content and just kind of work from there, really. So I can't really remember where the name came from. Just one of those things where you just a brainstorming session. So
And you didn't want Sully Hall to come down on you hard for getting close to their name.
Hopefully, I might have missed that. I've noticed a lot of people, you know, with like Landy and Land Rover in the name, have changed the company names recently. So, yeah, maybe we've escaped that. We'll see.
I'm hoping that was one of the reasons it took me a while to find a name for our podcast to have that. Hopefully, not have that same issue.
Mm.
So you've been out there for 3 or 4 years now and posting a number of articles. And how do you get this inspiration for the articles? Are you actually driving around? What are you driving? I guess that's a good first question. What are you driving?
At the minute, I have a 2008 Defender 110, which has got it's basically a transit van engine, diesel engine in. And I also have a TD5, which was a BMW-derived, or a Land Rover engine produced whilst BMW owned Land Rover. And I have...
You mean when they stole all of the Range Rover information to build the X5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very much. but the vehicle that I've got at the minute is pretty interesting vehicle. So I'm working on that as a project. So that's one of my ongoing projects at the minute.
And what's the project? Is it like an overland vehicle, or is this like rock crawler? Mm-hmm. What's the plan?
It's going to be a back to basics Defender, which sounds daft, but there's a growing trend in the UK to make sport Defenders, tuned Defenders, and I want to produce this vehicle. It will be for sale when I'm finished, and it's going to be a modern day series Land Rover. That's my kind of concept, but we'll see how it goes. It may end up just not working at all.
So what is the plan then? What do you mean by a series, like this stripped down? Is this what year is it? Are you taking it back to like that year, or are you going to go back further in its look and feel?
It's a 99, and so basically it looks almost like a modern Defender, but I'm going to switch the hard top for a canvas top, galvanize anything that will stay still for long enough, and basically make the cab so you can hose it out again, because Land Rovers have come a little bit softer in there as they've gotten older, so, or newer, should I say. So back to basics Defender.
I think the hose out is definitely a is a way to do that. Yeah. Although my Series 3, I don't know that I'd want to hose it out, but.
No, it may not go too well.
Yeah, yeah, it's yeah.
A lot of the Lucas Electrics in it.
Yeah, and then somebody left on some electronics and in the Series 3 and went back to it a week later to use it, and it wouldn't start. I don't know who that is. So once they're tracked down, they will be sacked. And being a 24-volt system, the charging has not gone well, and while one battery is fine, the second battery is not, and the smart charger is too smart because it has decided it's only going to charge it to 11 volts and then stop. So, especially in these two nice days here, I haven't been able to drive my truck. I'm looking at it right now, and it is not moving with me. Anyways. But less about me and woes of my truck, I know. So you started the website, and you are is that like your full time gig? Am I allowed to ask that? Does that or do you have something? Like, do you have a full time job too?
Yeah, I wish it was my full time job, but hopefully in the next year, maybe.
That's cool.
We'll see. At the minute, it's just sort of if I come up with an idea. It's usually something that I'm interested in or something that I'm doing to my own Land Rover. So I then think, well, I'll put an article up and share it with the world and see what they think. So,
speaking of articles you've put up there, one of the ones that I caught a couple months ago was how to plastidip your Land Rover Defender. And is that something you did or doing?
Yes. I did it to my TD5 that's in bits at the minute. We used it as my wedding car a couple of years ago, and it needed either respraying or drastically refinishing. So at the time, I came across something called Plastidip, and there's a guy on YouTube called, I think he calls himself the Fonzie, so he's like A, and he shows you how to basically Plastidip any vehicle. But nobody had actually done it to a Land Rover, so I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And it's a really interesting application of a product. It's sort of like respraying your vehicle, so you get all the same benefits. It changes color, improves the look and feel of it, but it's a lot cheaper than if you were to just go out and buy a professional grade spray gun and paints and primers and everything. But the main thing about it is you can remove it. So at any point up to around 2 years, you can literally just peel this. It's like a layer over the top of your original vehicle, and it's absolutely fine underneath, and it's very cool stuff. So I came across it, tried it, and I have actually removed it now because I don't need it any longer like that. But yeah, it was pretty good stuff.
So you still have to prepare the surface because it will still show blemishes and holes and pits and things, I assume, right?
Yeah, I had some typical, you know, where the bulkhead cappings react with the tubs, and I just rubbed it down, primered it, and give it a good wash, let it dry, and then you just literally, you get it's an airless spray gun, electric spray gun. They're the ones that work the best. And you add a fine layer, building it up. I think it works out to around 2 or 3 millimeters thick, so probably thicker than primer and paint together. Hmm. But it needs to be relatively thick so you can peel it off. And you don't need to do the masking that you need to do is very minimal because you can just remove it from anywhere that you don't want it. And it follows the edges of, you know, like a headlight surround. It will peel absolutely perfectly along that line. So it's really interesting material.
How long does it last? So you said there's a 2 year, what's the two, and where does 2 years kick in?
I think the 2 years limit is once it hits 2 years, it becomes brittle. So it won't peel off easily. And that's obviously more of a problem, but up until that point, it should maintain its kind of, it's not UV unstable or anything like that.
I see. So 2 years, it becomes somewhat permanent.
It becomes more of a pain to remove. What I've never actually heard of anybody having problems taking it off. So
okay.
That's what I can surmise anyway.
It's expensive.
Pardon me. Sorry. How much was it now? I think it worked out about half the price of having of respraying it myself with traditional paint.
Okay.
So what would that be at the time?
Easier to put on?
£150.
Okay. Would you say £150?
Yeah, about $300, something like that.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's actually
pretty cheap. Yeah, cheap.
Very cheap.
I did it at the time. I think it was about -5 degrees. I did it outside on the drive under a big, not even a canvas tent, just a cheap party tent. So very easy to put on because I was thinking this isn't going to last, but seemed to work fine. That was well outside of its operating temperatures, but worked really well. The only thing
Carry on. I was just going to ask, how resilient is it? Does it last or does it scratch easily or anything like that?
Once it's cured, it's quite rugged, but it does hold on to dirt. That's the only problem, which obviously with a Land Rover is a bit of a pain. And I have noticed that on the YouTube videos of the manufacturers, they wash their vehicles once a day with like a power washer. And I'm presuming that's why, because I had a white, I chose white, and that just held on to dirt quite badly. So it's a bit of a faff when it comes to that, but it's not too bad. And obviously, if you factor in the price, what it actually does, and that you can remove it at any point, it's a very unusual, interesting product.
And does it have a rubbery feel to it once it's cured? I mean, if you actually run your hand over it, does it feel plasticky? Does it feel rubbery?
Yeah, it feels like a kind of hybrid between plastic and rubber. It's not as grippy as rubber. Apparently, it's the same stuff they use on tool handles in a slightly different mix. It's that kind of, you can get a gloss finish. So it would feel just almost like traditional paint, but in the matte finish, that's standard plastic finish, it's kind of got a bit of a rough, if you're looking up very close, it's got a kind of rough orange peel effect to it.
Okay.
But it does
plug
up all
the links. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just saying it kind of plugs in all the microscopic fissures and leaks in a Land Rover body, which was quite good.
Yeah, I can't complain about that. And how does it stand up to washing? I was wondering whether it, does reasonably well with that, or whether you can rub it off just by washing.
You wouldn't be able to rub it off. You can use a power pressure washer on it, a commercial grade one, and it wouldn't come off. It would if you rubbed against a tree or a rock, but I mean paint would. So the benefit is if you clean up the area, you could literally just go over the top with more plastic dip, and you could repair it in 5-10 minutes.
Sounds very convenient.
It's cool. It's worth looking into.
Almost too convenient.
Yeah.
Sorry. Of course, we'll have a link to your article on that for those who want to see the pictures, because you did take a number of nice photos. The party tent, which is kind of like a parking pavilion for us. Mask things off. You put the coat on, put a couple coats on. Pulled the masking tape. Looks like you did the bumper and the wheel arches and the headlight. So the headlight was covered in plastic. No, kidding. and then there's even a picture. You have an extreme close up of the final finish, and it has that rubbery look to it. You can tell it's not completely smooth, I guess, is the point to make. That's kind of an interesting. I can see where it probably would hold up a little more because it does have that kind of uneven finish to it. But
One of the more interesting applications I could see for it, if you had an old restored Series 1 Land Rover you'd spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, pounds on, you could get the clear plastic dip and apply that. Say you could do it over the front of the body, you could do it over the entire body, and it would go a long way to protect it from stone chips and things like that. Or in a classic car, something like that kind of application.
It's actually a really good idea. I hadn't thought of that. That's actually kind of smart, because I mean they do put the clear coat. When you get a good paint job, they put that clear coat over it. But this could be maybe even in addition to that, because as you buff and when you buff a car, and you do the buffing and the waxing, it takes that clear coat off. Is usually over time that wears down. This could be a nice, almost like a what's the plastic varnish that you put on paint? I can't think of it. Someone help me out.
Ollie?
What?
Polyurethane?
No, polyurethane. It's almost like a polyurethane finish.
Mm.
There we go. Long way to go for polyurethane. So that is Plastidip, and that's one of several articles that you have on your website. So I encourage folks to go out and take a look at thefunrover.com to check that and many other articles that support your addiction. do you have any articles on the Land Rover addiction? Maybe there's something you can work on.
That sounds like a good idea for the future. It's a definite medical problem.
It is. I've sometimes called it a disease because you buy one and next thing you know, there's about 12 in your driveway and you have no idea how that happened. In fact, that's happening to Mark. Speaking of which, Mark, did you go and get that disco?
That is planned for next Saturday. Oh, at this next point. Saturday.
Okay. So for those who are not familiar, Mark's D2 was in a small accident and was taken off the road. And he's decided to buy another disco and then do some part swapping and such. And I think he found one in Ohio. So that's what I was referring to. But getting back to Fun Rover, this is another article that was sitting out there that I think we should spend some time talking about because it just was kind of fun. And this maybe is actually along the lines. I think this would be number 19 because you have 18 interesting Land Rover facts. I think number 19 might be it is a disease. Thank you. I'll be here all week. So we'll just go through some of these because again we'll have a link to this in the show notes. But take a look at it. Burma Bright Aluminium or aluminum. They were until 1980. Land Rover panels were still made from Burma Bright, but the alloy was used in the Bluebird K7, Donald Campbell's 7-time world speed record breaking hydroplane. So these are some of the kind of cool little interesting facts that you have out here. Any other kind of step off the page for anybody? Oh, the last leaf sprung Land Rover was sold in what year? Anybody? No? 1985. 1992, Land Rover claimed that over 70% of all the vehicles they built were still in use. This figure is often slightly overinflated to 75% by fans and even Top Gear in their Land Rover feature, which is still one of the best. I assume you're referring to the best cars of all time and the Series 1 being in that list. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
That was a good one. I will say I do watch that occasionally more often than I care to admit. Side decals were all the rage in the 1980s and 90s. Land Rover phased out the graphics in 1994 for the disco due to a shift in car fashion. And 1997 saw the end of the Defender side stickers. I never did understand it, but they do kind of look cool in a way. But I don't know. And sometimes it's nice to see a Defender with that little side swoopy thing going on. You can tell it is definitely very 70s with the multicolored colors that are in the same, same family. But they would put County on them and put Defender and stuff. That was always interesting.
I am very much looking forward to removing mine, though, because it does look a bit too old.
Well, maybe if you plastid dip yours and then you could do another, then you could do your own mask off and do your own.
Well, I was thinking that just on the subject of Plastidip, just to try it out, if you hear that, that's actually a can of Plastidip that I've got that I'm going to be trying it out at some point soon.
So I'll let you know what are you going to put it on?
On the 110.
Sorry, I was going to say what part of the Land Rover?
Initially, just any part that's slightly flat, not rusty, without any corrosion on it or dirt. So I've actually got one piece.
The windscreen?
Pretty much. Or just behind the passenger door, there's the little A-shaped angle piece just in front of the wheel arch that is quite clean. So I'm going to try it on that probably. It's the one bit I've got left that actually looks nice.
Same color? Blue?
No, it's a kind of tan beige color.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Another interesting fun fact, there were famous owners. Land Rovers appeal to everyone. The Queen has one. I think she has a couple, actually. But there were a few other famous Land Rover fans. I think some of these you guys probably know this. Rowan Atkinson, Sean Connery, Jim Carrey, who was on Saturday Night Live last night, but he did not mention Land Rover. I don't understand. Paul McCartney, Michael J. Fox, Sarah Klatman, Bill Murray. Is Bill Murray really a Land Rover fan? That seems...
To the internet, yes.
Interesting. I'd like to track that down. That one. We need facts, man. Facts. He seems. I don't know. That's interesting. And of course, Fun Rover launched almost 4 years ago. They've served up 187,000 page views to date, and this was. And now you say you're over 200,000, right?
Yeah. I think we're looking at maybe 50,000 uniques this year. Hopefully.
Very nice. Very nice. Someday you'll have to, I'm in the, you know, the computer field, but I've set up Google Analytics and all the business on our site, and I just kind of like set it and forget it. So maybe someday you can show me to look at my statistics and see if it means anything. I don't know. Because still.
I've just looked now about Bill Murray. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Breaking news.
Bill Murray is a Land Rover fan. Here we go. We're breaking some news.
He has a black series Land Rover, and apparently every year he goes back to the Groundhog Day. You remember that film, Groundhog Day?
We have to.
And he goes back to a reunion in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
You have to understand, sir, that movie was, it starts with, have you seen Groundhog Day?
Yes.
Well, that opening scene is Pittsburgh. And Punxsutawney, repeat after me, Punxsutawney is probably about an hour, maybe an hour and a half north of where I live. So I had not heard that he did that. Interesting. Series truck. Well, yeah. So neat. Well, good for him. Well done for him. All right. Why don't we move into the news? Unless there's something else you want to tell us about Fun Rover, Ben?
Just make sure you go on the website and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube.
You got it
all finished.
You have it all covered. All right. So first up on the news, and feel free to chime in as you see fit. So first up from Autoblog, Land Rover to send off Defender with an SVR special. There's no details here, but the article indicates that the special vehicle, what's the R stand for? I forget. Special vehicle division, they're going to do that, to do something. Their next project will be on the Defender. Of course, they show a picture here of the Buller 110. Anybody have any ideas what they might do, or are they having some ideas of what they would like to see them do besides bring it to the United States?
A name like that, maybe they'll take one of the Range Rover Sport souped up engines and drop it in one.
It's got to have a V8 because it's the last ever special edition that they'll do. And I like how it says that it's inspired by the Camel Trophy and Paris-Dakar variants, so rally raid vehicles. That is a good point of inspiration, I think.
Yes, and I've been hearing increased rumors of a V8 in it. So we can hope. But really, for us, whether it comes to the U.S., that would be nice. It'll never happen.
25 years.
Yes.
Put your order in now. All right.
Some people are saying it could keep the current Bowler Challenger using 2.2 TDCI DuraTorque engine in a tuned-up form. So it would be a bit disappointing if it had a transit van engine. It would be a bit of a disappointment, I think.
Well, would you want to see it petrol or diesel?
It's got the last ever Land Rover Defender model produced has to have either a diesel V8 or a petrol V8 from a Range Rover.
Yeah, as Americans, of course, the diesel is the one we always covet. So we'd definitely say diesel.
I wonder if being like a special release if we would be able to get around customs and get one here new.
Well, you'd have to get a customs release, and they only did that. The last I heard, they did that was in what, 97 to bring in the few of the Defenders that didn't have airbags, but that expired. Well, speaking of the United States, JLR, Jaguar Land Rover, is in talks, so the Auto News says, to actually build a manufacturing plant in the United States. And this would be done to enable them to avoid import tariffs and smoothen the impact of fluctuating currency rates. They've already opened up a plant in China. They're working on a plant in Brazil, I think, to open in 2016. So I personally think this is a great idea.
Do the sales kind of, is it viable with relation to the sales over there?
It doesn't say. It says that the factory, there's a little more detail here. They're looking at southern states, not surprisingly, because of they worry about unions, including South Carolina, about financial support from a factory that would eventually produce 200,000 vehicles a year. My guess is they would be Range Rover, Range Rover Sports, and maybe the Evoque, and what's the new one, the Disco Sport, because I think those are huge sellers.
Right.
Yeah, they're very much waitlisted for most of those models here in the U.S. So I think that it is viable. Obviously, it's also nice to have some more jobs here, and also it's an environmental impact issue to produce them more locally.
You know, Steve, if you participated in last month's podcast, you would know.
Oh, really?
I know. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. But we know last month we did talk about that there is a wait list for Range Rover Sports here in the U.S. To the point where they are getting above sticker price. And it's the fact it's the in September or maybe it was August. It's the number one vehicle that you cannot negotiate for. And if you're not familiar here in the U.S., you can actually negotiate a car price. That one they will happily negotiate with you as long as you give them more than sticker. So they are. There's a list for the vehicles here. I think one thing that is different from the U.S. and maybe even the rest of the world, but certainly the U.K. when it comes to Land Rover, that is not often discussed, is that here in the U.S. it's very much a high end luxury brand that's seen that way. So I think that's what confuses some people about when the Freelander came here, because it was not positioned, I think, in the same way. The Defender would also confuse people because it would not be positioned as kind of a high-end luxury vehicle. But here we see if you have a Range Rover or Range Rover Sport, it's very much considered a high-end vehicle, just like Mercedes and BMW, all considered high-end luxury vehicles here. So I think that pushes the demand, as we've seen, based on the information we had from last month, and them building a plant here just would probably make some sense to meet that demand and probably make them more money too.
And I just want to remind Steve that, just because he missed the second recording last time, he's not necessarily to blame.
No. Somebody got
this. Anyway, back to the news.
But back to the news. Yes, actually. And we have another bit of good news. Land Rover is mulling an Evoque diesel for the United States. And this was from our friends at Autoblog. They're just toying with the idea. I think the words they use were seriously considering the prospect of offering a diesel version of the Evoque in America. And that's pretty much all it said. But I guess at the...
So they're thinking about considering it.
They're thinking about considering the prospect of.
Right.
So maybe. My guess is they're floating a trial balloon. They want to see how much, if there's any interest in people thinking about maybe doing the idea, would you actually pony up for an Evoque diesel? I would. If I was in the market for an Evoque, I would. A diesel one would be killer. I think that would just be absolutely killer, especially based on what my Jetta TDI gets, in gas mileage and in range, and just the power is really nice. Really nice.
I agree completely.
It would be more buy-in off of perhaps the Discovery platform than the Evoque.
Well, I think, but if you want to sell a bunch of units and you want to get some buy-in from people, I think the Evoque would be the way to go, because it is a somewhat cheaper car than a stand than the rest of the range, and it's also one that's a hot seller at the moment. And you might get a good uptick with that, and you get some units out there, and it would show that there's a demand for it. I think that's my guess is what the thinking is there. I don't know there's as much demand for a standard disco, but I could be wrong. So next in the news is continuing on with Jag Land Rover. They're blazing a trail for British car manufacturing. So Tata has made a significant investment in JLR, and they are employing some cutting-edge technologies to drive its business. This was an article from over the summer in The Guardian. And now that we have some time, as the event season is rolling down, we thought we could bring this good opportunity to talk about this article.
There's the thought about Land Rover kind of starting to build cars with glue and rivets, which I think is an interesting idea, considering probably about 50 or 60 years ago, I'm sure that's how they were put together anyway. So the fact they're going to head back towards putting things together, putting them with glue, and then self-sealing rivets, apparently it says, is quite an interesting idea.
Well, I can attest that it actually is being done now, because when I did the factory tour, they showed us that machine, that there's a robot that does that, that puts the glue on, and then they kind of rivet things together. And apparently the rivets are only backup. They think that the glue's enough.
Wow. That suggests that the panels can also be fairly easily removed.
I didn't think so. I think the glue was such a high strength glue. You know, they're holding the car together with just basically glue. It's got to be really good.
Yeah, it seems like a number of levels higher than what we're used to with, you know, spot welds and rivets and seam sealer. You can't just sort of drill out the rivets and then scrape off the adhesive when it's that well bonded.
And
also, sorry, the panels, they form part of the structure of the monocoque shell, the unibody. So if you were to take a wing or a rear wing off, then you could actually cause a whole heap of problems if you could get the resin off.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think to go along with that, you know, that the way they build cars now, with them being this, you know, the monocoque and the and panel stamped out, and then they don't want any human hands touching them, having the stuff glued together, I think A goes faster, and the materials they're using, I think sounds like they meet better, and they can put them in a better place, and you don't have to worry about the tabs and have to worry about getting bolts and nuts in there. And there's also less parts they have to buy. You also talk about less weight. I just thought of that one, because if you're not putting on 50 bolts to hold on a panel, there's, you know, how much is a bolt weigh? I don't know, but it certainly adds up after you get, you know, 2,000 of them in a vehicle. I mean, that can be significant when you're looking at...
Yeah, bolt.
I was just saying, I think it would make for a much quieter vehicle overall as well.
Yeah, we would think so. It's certainly a big, you know, weight savings should make a such a tighter seal, that also probably it's significantly stronger as well. Because even something where you have spot welds, you have sections where it's not welded. So by having the strength through the entire seam is immensely better.
Yeah, well, I guess I can attest then that they are in fact doing what this article was talking about of having you know, the robots put these things together. And it would, you know, which if I can say this again, having seen the Defenders being built, it was a vast difference between seeing a modern, you know, Range Rover being built. And you can see one of the notes, and I mentioned this the last time, and I'll probably keep mentioning this for a while, so try to stop me, is that you can, another reason why you can see why they want to stop building the Defender in its current way, because it is such a man intensive project. There's always somebody bolting something together. There's always someone, some human doing something to put that vehicle together. And you would see 8 or 6 people on in one station doing something, whether it's putting the doors on, putting the roof together, and then, you know, putting electronics in and running the wires. And very little of that whole Defender building process was automated as we would understand it. And then you see, then you go to the other side of the plant and you see them building, you know, the Rangies and the Discos, and they're all in the same line, and the computer knows enough to switch different. It understands that it's building it to order, and it knows this one should be red and this one should be black, and this one needs to is a sport and this one's not a sport, and this one needs to go to Europe and this is going to the Middle East, and so it knows what differences to do. You can, again, more reasoning why you can see why I think they want to stop building the Defender in the current way, because it's not as efficient, and it probably doesn't make them as enough money, and also it takes a long time, because it is certainly a lot, takes longer to build a Defender than it does a you know, say a Rangy.
It also you know, it's interesting that the Defenders and the series, most of those, well, at least according to, you know, the mid-90s, 70% were still on the road. You know, you can still rebuild those, whereas all the new ones, you know, it's pretty much, if you damage it, it's time to get a new one.
just ask Mark.
Right. Hey, he's just swapping some parts over.
Yes, that's it. That's all. And that certainly is a good point, Morgan, too, on the other side of the coin of, it does make it more difficult for the average person that wants to work on their vehicle or make it better or repair it. It certainly makes it more difficult. But I guess in the long run, the payoff is a stronger vehicle, quieter, more fuel efficient. You know, you get the bells and whistles, I suppose.
Absolutely.
All right. Lastly, in some news is this article is from Forbes, and it's not specifically Land Rover related, but it was certainly interesting enough that I thought we wanted to talk about it. Next to hit the roads, 3D printed cars. And exactly what it sounds like, there are folks that are thinking that you would walk into a showroom at 8 a.m., say, I want X, Y, and Z, I want these options. And then you come back at 5 p.m., and they will have built your car, printed out the parts, and you drive away.
Apparently. I've actually seen some videos of the one that they built, and, you know, obviously it's got a long way to go. It's a very rough, I think they're printing carbon fiber at this point. So it looks pretty much like it was built with a glue gun. So it's rough, but they were able to build one and drive it around. It was a little electric vehicle. But beyond the ability to just build in a short order and fairly customized, you can actually almost completely redesign it as long as it's on roughly the same chassis design.
Yeah,
which is pretty fascinating.
I definitely see they'd have to have chassis in the back and, you know, and then be able to, whatever body style you wanted, then they would bolt on. That would be at least my thought.
In this case, they probably did.
Yeah, I was going to say it'll be integrated with the body. It's a monocoque design. But it's a really interesting thing because they can also 3D print different materials alongside each other. So if you wanted, in theory, you could print a wheel bearing. You could make engine components that are already assembled, ready to go. It's a really unique industry to be in.
I don't know
if it's very
handy to not have to go to a parts store. You could go to a website, say, I need this part, and have it, you know, file off the design to your 3D printer at home and print it for you.
And certainly as a series Land Rover owner, having difficulty finding parts would no longer be a problem.
But how was
not quite that inexpensive and convenient, but.
Well, how was the plastic? And I know there's different types of plastic, but how's that going to hold up to metal?
In many ways, it's actually more resilient. Because metal,
even a bearing. So if I print a, you know, the best there is plastic bearing, is that as good
oh,
as
no.
Okay?
Yeah, absolutely not. And even with the one that they printed so far, it had its own, I mean, the electric motor, the suspension system, the steering components, all of that for the drivetrain were actually built separately and not printed. But they have so many printing options out there now that it is possible with all the different technologies to print metal and print plastic and print carbon fiber. So with multiple machines, you could build almost the entire components.
And I'm surprised you don't have one yet, Morgan.
I'm still rebuilding the series. I seem to be going backwards in technology.
You're a little more technology oriented even than I am, and that's why I thought you'd have a 3D printer.
Yeah, they're tempting. A little pricey yet, but they're coming down fast.
Yeah, they are.
And the speed at which they print is still quite disappointing.
Oh, that's actually never thought of that.
Consumer one.
I never thought of that. How fast are they? Do you have any reference?
Slow. Yeah. Not within a Land Rover context, but you're looking at, for even basic components, a couple of hours. So once you start adding internal cores into things for strength and additional materials, you can be looking at days worth of printing for quite small components.
If you think about it, it's almost like, I mean, they're very much like inkjet printers, but the performance these days is more like going back to the old dot matrix printers.
Mm.
Exactly.
I don't know. Would it be dialogue?
I don't even know if people remember dot matrix printers.
I remember dot matrix printers. I remember being at family functions and people would bring out dot matrix printed Snoopies and Mona Lisas, and then it was like, oh, look at this, and you're like, oh, that's really cool, and then then you go back to eating.
Exactly.
It was kind of the Facebook of its day. Look at what I did. I got this at work. This is really cool. Well, that's the Mona Lisa in dot matrix printer and different font sets. Okay.
Well, that's the thing we lost with the move to laser and inkjet printers was you could no longer print banners.
That's true. You're right. Yeah, because
I don't think anybody's really missed it too much, though.
Yeah. Now you get those vinyl. You get those vinyl banners. Those are pretty cool. That's true.
Totally.
That's true. So that is the news. Interesting things that we saw in the past month or so having to do with Land Rovers and other such things. Now we're going to move into our events portion of the program. First thing we want to talk about, and Steve, you couldn't join us last month, so, you couldn't join us in the recorded version, I should say. I realized it was my mistake for deleting the original one, which was done in the Cherry Tree Bed and Breakfast common room. And was that not fun, Steve? Tell me that wasn't fun.
That was great fun.
It was the best.
It was a great weekend, to be honest.
In between, you had gone to the Adventure Overland show. Can you tell us? I know you did a field report for us, but can you give us a little more on what happened, what went on there, and what you thought of it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was on the 27th and 28th of September at Stratford-upon-Avon Racecourse. It's a nice venue, very outdoors, obviously. The majority of vehicles there were clearly Land Rover 110s. In the campground, there must have been maybe 150 vehicles, not a huge amount. And of that, I would say at least 50 or 60% of them were the 110s with roof tents and things like that. The rest were made up of everything else.
Steve, I have to pause you. You say 150 vehicles was not a lot. You've not been to the United States and seen how many 110s we can get together. Okay. I don't think there's 150 in the whole country. So please, please be mindful of your superlatives.
The US has okay. got a lot of them.
Yeah. True.
Too soon.
Yeah. It's an interesting show because it covers a whole range of ways of traveling overland. There is a section for the motorcyclists, so that they had all their overland guys. There was even a very small push bike area, Then you have the large expedition vehicles, which this year, disappointingly, there weren't so many display vehicles as in previous years. They didn't have the big man trucks there that they've had previously. It was still good, nonetheless. Lots of stands there related to anything travelling, bushcraft, all that kind of thing. Even a blacksmith, I guess you'd call it, called the Iron Dwarf. And this guy was just literally there with his furnace, building and making any bits and pieces that you might want, you know, just fabricating it on that weekend. So that was interesting to watch. There were seminars. So there was one seminar that I went to that was related to how to film your travel in a documentary style. So there was all tips and hints about that from a professional media guy.
Anything good you can report on that one? That interests me.
Basically, it was things along the lines of this guy uses a Canon 5D SLR to record all of his documentary films. He was saying things that if you have a GoPro, then use them sparingly. They're good. They have their place, but you can't really do a full film related to, you know, with GoPro because you just get a bit bored of the fisheye lens and things like that. And he's talking about just how to make it different. What I will do, I'll look up his website because he actually has a internet-based TV series. And he's part of the production crew with, do you know a guy called Danny Jules, Cat, from Red Dwarf?
Oh, yeah, I know Red Dwarf, the guy that played the cat.
Yeah. The guy that played the cat, he is a big motorbike nut, and they have travelled kind of far and wide, and he's been part of the crew that's actually been travelling, and it's all on the internet, all filmed. What I'll do is I'll look up the website and let you guys know later to put it on the in the show notes. So there's that. How to cross borders, being aware of border crossings, and how to manage those, having more than one passport all the time, having a dirty passport, they call it a clean passport, so that you can ensure that you use the dirty passport for areas that don't like, I mean, say, for instance, you're traveling from into Syria or Iran or something like that, you may not want to use the same passport that you're traveling back to the US or the UK with. It's that kind of thing that they were talking about. So it's very interesting, different points of view, and different shows, different seminars. And it was really quite good. It was 2 weeks. They had a nice beer tent in the evening, which was useful. And you'd appreciate this, John. When I asked him what beer he actually had, he said he's got a light one, a dark one, and one made with honey. And that was his whole description of the beers that he had. So that was good.
I'm now glad I did not attend that event.
Yeah. So that was a bit of fun.
I much prefer the pub that we went to at Peterborough.
That pub was
outstanding.
Yeah, it was very nice. When it is light, dark, or honey flavored, and it's like okay, whichever. they all sound equally awful, and they tasted it, to be honest. So they weren't great. And that was where I saw the 110 with the pizza oven in the back of it. It's actually a log-fired pizza oven fitted into the back of the Land Rover 110, which was great, really. Cured all the heating problems that you might have.
That explains your tweet then. Sorry. That you talked about if you run out of heat in the truck. Was that the tweet? Okay.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, solves all anyone's heating problems with the Defenders. Just get yourself a log-fired burner in the back. It's great. very nice. So overall, a really good weekend. A little bit disappointing on the display trucks this year, but it was, you know, good for hints and bits and just picking up the few bits and pieces and getting ideas for the future, really.
So what was the one or two things that you picked up that you're going to take with you for your future adventures?
Well, it was related to the filming, because that was good. And talking about presentation of or putting together the videos and the software and that kind of thing. Not being too brash with things, being quite subtle, not using the GoPro all the time. But if you did want to use a helmet cam quite often, use a Drift Ghost, which was it gives a better kind of field of view, and also is permanently recording. So it records about 30 seconds all of the time, but just overwrites itself. So if something happens that you want to keep, and it's unexpected, then you can just store that particular snippet of film, which is really useful. So that was good. And the talk, there was one about overloading vehicles as well and not putting too much and actually thinking about what you need to take. So rather than putting everything on the vehicle so that you have a home away from home, think about the weight of the vehicle, think about what you actually want to do, because a lot of it is useless and a lot of it doesn't get used and it just weighs the vehicle down and will end up not working anyway.
Yeah, interesting.
So there's a few different things like that.
Interesting you say that.
So, yeah, it's good.
I was at a party recently and one of the folks there had just come off the Appalachian Trail. And if you're not familiar with the Appalachian Trail, it's a hiking, walking trail that goes on the east coast of the United States, I think from Vermont, New Hampshire, all the way down to Georgia, I believe. It's something like 3,500 miles. And a lot of people like to, you know, walk the whole Appalachian Trail. It's a badge of honor for them. And this gentleman, I think, got two-thirds of the way down before he had hurt himself and had to come off the trail. But one of the things he talked about was how much stuff he took with him. He started off with his huge backpack, and he had duplicate items, and he had things that he thought he was going to have to use or maybe could use. And then as the walk went on and his wife would come meet him, he would give her more and more things that he did not need. Mm-hmm. And I think it sounds like the same thing. People probably want to take too much with them to begin with and don't consider the weight and those kind of considerations when they're setting off on their journey.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, from my own experience with the bits and pieces that I've done traveling around, I tend to take too much. Luckily, I haven't gone anywhere too, you know, off the beaten track.
Not like the Arctic Circle or anything. No.
Well, no, but I mean, that was a tarmac road, and it was, you know, it's civilized. It's not like it's the Sahara or anything like that yet. You know, that's the kind of point is that I'm taking away from it, is just being a bit more careful, being economical with the weight. I guess that's what you call it.
Yeah, that's smart. Very, very smart. Sounds like a cool event. Yeah, I think if I came back, that would probably be the one I'd want to go to. I mean, LRO was really interesting, but I think the Overland Adventure would be a little more interesting to me now, having seen the other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about the Adventure Overland?
No.
Would you go back?
Yes, I will be going back. I'll keep an eye on the website. I'm not sure if I do a full weekend there again, but I will keep on the website and see if anything new or anything different is going to happen next year.
Actually, I do. Did have one last question for you. How does it compare in size to LRO, since you know, you and I went there this year? How does it compare? Is it the same size, bigger, smaller? Did you walk 8 miles the first day?
No, I would say it may be about a quarter of the size.
Okay.
It's smaller, but it's very specific. So it is quite small, but it was enough that on a Saturday I'd have a wander around and decide what I wanted to do. The seminars made a great difference. And that's the thing about going for the weekend, is you really do get to see all the seminars that you want to see. And if you go for the day, you don't see them. So that's the key thing. So it's how you manage that, really. And that was the main part, is actually listening to the talks from the other experienced folks, really.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So there was another event in the last month here in North America, which was a Conclave. No one that attended the event is on the podcast. So once, and I didn't see any information about it. So once we hear, get someone who could talk about it, we will. That is, and then there's also MAR too, which it's so unfortunate that MAR is not what it used to be. And certainly thought of as it used to be. I had attended for a number of years as one of the very first, I think it was the very first major Land Rover event that I had gone to. And it isn't what it apparently is used to be. Maybe it'll come back. I don't know. It was like the thing. Everybody went to MAR, which was stood for Mid-Atlantic Rovers, by the way. And coming up, though, is as this is the time of year when show season kind of slows down and trail stuff slows down. But coming up is Rovers on the Rocks 5 or 6. And does anybody – I know Dave, I think, is planning to go. And that's going to take place November 14th to the 15th.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. I went last year, and hopefully I'll be it this year as well.
What are you going to drive?
It's kind of a toss-up. If I get this Land Rover Discovery squared away, I'll take that. If not, I'll take the series.
Yeah, it's only, well, that's 2 weeks away, isn't it?
Yep.
Yep. And that's it. So you'll get the truck next weekend, and then the weekend after you'll take it on, you'll take it off-roading to Roush Creek.
That's the hope.
It's in true Land Rover spirit. I love it. Absolutely fantastic.
And solid that, weekend with the guys. We should have it ready to go.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, yeah, that's November 14th or 15th in Rush Creek in central Pennsylvania. And hopefully Mark and or Dave can report back to us when that occurs. So as far as other upcoming events, there should be the Winter Rally that takes place in Maine. Or no, not Maine. Yeah, there's one in Maine, isn't there? And there's also one in Nova Scotia, right?
There's the Winter Romp in Maine.
Thank you. And there's the Winter Romp in Maine, and then there's the what takes place in Nova Scotia. It eludes me at the moment, on the gentleman's farm. But that's coming up. Well, we'll get that stuff, and that's coming up. So if people want to know what's happening, check our show notes. I'll get those links up when I find them. So thanks for joining us today for our 19th podcast. Please take a few minutes to get in touch with us. We are coming up on our second anniversary, and we're interested in your ideas and thoughts. You know, we do this podcast for ourselves. Admittedly, it's truly a labor of love. There's no other. I get no remuneration. I don't get anything for it. I take time out of my day, and so do the folks that join me to do the podcast and talk about Land Rover stuff because we find it interesting and cool. But we want to know what your ideas and thoughts are. Do you like what we're doing? Do you not like what we're doing? Is it going in a good direction? We've settled into some routine, and I don't. Hopefully, folks like it. So I have an idea here, and Derek in St. Louis, one of our listener. Hopefully there's others, but Derek has suggested a guest for us, and we're going to plan on having that gentleman from the UK talk to us in a few months. Next month, I think Jeff Aronson from Rivers North Magazine is going to join us. And then, so I'm looking at December for this gentleman from who helps to import and export defenders, join us for December. But get in touch with us. And I have a gift, I guess, for the first three ideas that we get from our listeners. This isn't from our panelists. I will send you in the mail a center steer bumper sticker. Coveted in the sense that no one knows they're even out there. they're not the best.
I have one.
That's true. I think you do. You do have one, Steve. I brought one over. And I will also send you a couple in addition. We have Center Steer podcast cards, and I will ship a couple of those to the lucky three winners. So contact us via email, Facebook, G+, although I'm about to give up on G+. Seems like no one's using it. Or even tweet us and get back to us and give us some ideas. I'll ship you out a bumper sticker. I have like three or so extras that I'd be happy to ship out. If you are a graphic designer and you want to come up with better looking bumper stickers, feel free to do that too. I did this on the fly, so that's the way things are. But that is our episode. I want to thank all our panelists for joining us today. Our special guest, Ben from Yorkshire in the UK. It's great having folks join us from the UK, from the motherland. Thank you, Ben.
It's okay. Thank you for having me.
And Steve, and don't forget to visit funrover.com. That's Ben's website. And check him out on the Twitters, the Facebooks. I think you gave up on G+ too.
Yeah.
I think so. You're on YouTube and Instagram also, which we are not. As I think of it, I did put up a video, and it's on the I linked to it from our G+ account, but I did put up some video from the Peterborough show. I did some the bowler. EMLRA did a little display and some other video that's out there. So if you want to check that out, go to the Twitter account, or I'll have a link on the our webpage also. And while I think of it, I want to call to your attention Ed Cobley, who drives the bowler. He actually put out some video that he had gotten of him driving at Peterborough, driving the Range Rover Sport bowler around. And you might want to check that out. Go to his Twitter account, which is at EDDCOBLEY. Again, I'll have a link to that, but it's EDDCOBLEY. He's the driver of the bowler. And trying to close out still, I want to thank Steve. Steve, thanks for joining us from Milton Keynes. Are you still in Milton Keynes?
No.
Oh. Oh, you're near Milton Keynes.
I'm 20 miles from Milton Keynes. I work in Milton Keynes.
Close enough.
Yeah, it's not far.
It's like I'm close to Pittsburgh. I'm 17 miles, so it's close enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today.
No problem.
And thanks, Mark, for calling in. You're also in Pittsburgh. I hope you get your disco. You'll let us know next month what goes on.
Certainly hope so. Thank you.
No worries. And, of course, Morgan, thank you very much from Vermont. Any update on your truck? Did you do any work on your series?
I'm actually on vacation this week, so I should be getting a little more progress. Hopefully all of the body paneling will be coming off.
Wow. And you'll be tweeting and all that fun stuff?
I will be.
Very exciting. Very
hopefully
exciting.
It doesn't rain.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, everybody. That is our podcast for September. Take care, and we'll talk to you next month.
The Center Steer theme song, Sunset Rider by the Tritons, is available from Mivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mivio.com.
I see blobs. Okay, it looks like I have blobs for me. This is a...
By blobs, are you talking about waveforms, by any chance?
As a matter of fact, we are. Blobs just sound more fun. Probably would have been funnier to say blobs are the British version of waveforms.